you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
This is The Thing About Cars, a podcast for car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. Welcome, everyone. I'm one of your hosts, Mickey Desai. Around the table, we've got Misty. How are you, Misty?
Cold?
Yeah,
it's like 2 degrees Celsius here.
Holy mackerel, in the Netherlands. I should not be surprised. Ben, how are you?
I'm pretty damn good. How about you?
I'm good, and Tim is way the heck out in the wilderness somewhere wearing a pair of mucklucks and hunting Bigfoot. How are you, Tim? Tim is muted. Bigfoot got him. Tim, if you can come back, please come back to the light. Tim is muted. Oh, well, we'll figure it out. There he is. Trivia's our Tim.
Thank you. Yeah, doing here great in South Carolina with big feet.
Ah, good. So we're glad you could join us today. And our friend Dean Case, who has been a guest for The Thing About Cars before and has visited Atlanta to check out the Kennesaw State University Automotive. What's it called, Dean? Is it called the Automotive Engineering Program?
Well, it's their SA student chapter. They build a Formula SAE car there.
Yeah, and that was a very cool experience to see what those guys are up to. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a second. But first, I wanted to ask our trivia question for today. And this trivia question, Tim may remember, Tim provided this one being trivia czar, so he's got a leg up on this answer. How old do you have to be to get a driver's license in South Dakota? Do you have to be 10, 12, 14, or 15? That's the choice. We'll talk about that again at the end of the show. In fact, let me ask a second one, because that seems a pretty straightforward question. A second question is, what is the Dodge Fratzog? Fratzog, F-R-A-T-Z-O-G. Is it the triangular logo used by Dodge from the early 1960s through the late 1970s? Is it a rebadged Mercedes-Benz Unimog sold to the U.S. military in the 60s? Or is it the Dodge model name used in place of Grand Caravan in Australia and New Zealand, where the words Grand Caravan are equivalent to Fat Camper? So we'll have those two questions at the end of the show. Dean, sir, how have you been?
Good, very good.
Excellent. And was that your first visit to Kennesaw?
No, I think that's my third or fourth time visiting that particular campus.
That was my first time checking out the program. I wasn't aware that they had an SAE chapter there.
Yeah, it's a very strong one, great group of students, kind of an underdog school, if you will, because it's not as well known as some of the others, but a great group of students, nice faculty, good shop, and they run a great program. You're looking to hire engineers, I would put that on your list of schools you might want to go visit to recruit from.
Yeah, they seem like really on the ball folks. I've been trying to be in touch with them to see if there's anything that we can do together as a podcast with their chapter. And I, you know, during the hiatus we took over Christmas, I'm afraid I dropped that ball. So I'm trying to pick that up again and see if they can come out to play. What do you do for SAE? Are you representing SAE to schools? Are you coaching kids across the world? What are you doing?
Well, I'm part of, there's a number of programs. I was there as part of the SAE Industrial Lecture Program, where there's a number of us who are, I guess, subject experts, for lack of a better phrase, who can go are available to be guest speakers at any of the 200 plus SAE student chapters across the country. So over the years, I've been a guest speaker at over 50 schools.
Wow.
And my talk is not really technical. Mine is a careers talk, things you don't cover in engineering school. And a lot of it is, you know, what I find, particularly with a lot of the schools, I run into a lot of first generation college students and kids who are really geeked about cars, but don't really have any connections or understand how to get their foot in the door. And working on a Formula SAE project or SAE Baja project is a starting point, but they're still trying to figure out, how do I leverage that into getting that great job with, you know, Honda or Ford or BMW or whoever their dream car company is, or Michelin or Goodyear, or, a supplier or a race team. So that's kind of what we talk about when I go visit the schools.
Yeah, no, and it was amazing. And those kids clearly, at least the one that I saw, those kids clearly have questions. A lot of engineering programs don't give them the softer side of what it means to do what
right.
the rest. Yeah, you know, the simple stuff like job hunting. You know, how do you represent yourself? How do you do the networking and stuff like that? So I thought that was pretty valuable for them. You say 50 schools in a year?
No, not in a year. Over the years, I've been. It's just when I worked for. It's just I've kind of dovetailed in with some of my other business travel where I would, it's kind of hard to justify spending the time to fly cross country to speak for 2 hours at a school. But if I can dovetail it in that particular trip, I was on my way to Sebring, Florida. So I just did a detour, routed myself through Atlanta on the way to Sebring.
Okay, that's cool. I have a few more questions for you, but I don't want to dominate here in case Misty or Ben have any questions for what any of this means.
Well, I was just wondering when Dean was going to come to Amsterdam, because I've got a line on one of the 20th anniversary MX-5s is actually for sale at my dealership.
Oh, wow. I've never been there. I would love to visit. I joke when people ask me if I'm going to a particular race. I said, not without a paying client. So
I'm looking into trying to get up there in April this year. If I can find cheap enough airfare, I would like to come visit. And Tim, I'm not excluding you. I muted you because I could hear the sounds of you walking through the leaves as you're searching for Bigfoot. So I temporarily muted you in case you need to unmute and interject a question here.
And actually, now that you've got me online, yes, the noise you might hear in the background is the rain on the tin roof here. And to just throw it out there, Dean, I was a member of the Georgia Tech Formula SAE team back in 87 and 88.
Early days. Yeah, Georgia Tech's always had. Well, Georgia Tech's involved in everything. They've got Formula SAE, Baja SAE, and they're also involved in the Grassroots Motorsports $2,000 Challenge, where they've won that multiple times. So, yeah, I visited Georgia Tech a couple of times.
It's a great program.
So, Tim, while we're talking about it, what did SAE do for you?
Well, let's see. The strange thing is that I don't have a degree in engineering. I ended up going through a different school and a different route after my first couple years being down at with my involvement with the Georgia Tech team. But it did give me a lot of real world knowledge on automotive mechanics and design. And I was on the bodywork team the first year, so I know how to make a complete fiberglass bodywork set for a vehicle. just general real life experience as far as wrench turning goes, the biggest thing for me. But like I said, I ended up, calculus and I don't get along together, so I ended up turning away from the world of engineering and went in another direction.
Actually, you raise an interesting point. The best Formula SA and Baja SA teams have non-engineers involved, because it's not just who can build the best, one-off prototype race car. It's you have to also have a business plan part of it, and there's a cost analysis. And it should, since it's functionally a spec car they're building, it needs to be good looking. So I always encourage them to, go find the graphics arts majors, find the business majors, and a lot of times the engineers say, well, how do we find these people? I go, it's easy. Walk through the student parking lot, look for any first-generation Miata, any Subaru WRX, any BMW, if it has manual transmission. If it's an automatic, walk by. But if it's a manual transmission, they're your people. And just put a tag their cars. Like, did you know you could be on a race team here at this school? And that's a relatively easy way to find some of those folks. But having non-engineers on the team is usually a huge positive.
Yeah. Diversity amongst teams is the key to success, I think. And they have a perfect vehicle, if you will, pun intended, to bring in different disciplines and get that cross communicative style stuff going. And I think that's a fantastic way to do it. I mean, there's nothing to hurt by asking, right? They may tell you no, but you've already got that.
And
yeah.
I sure wish my school had had this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think I found the perfect vehicle, again, pardon the pun, to get Dean over here to the Netherlands, because we've got the TU Delft, the Technical University Delft, and the one in Eindhoven. And I know they both field at least solar cars.
Well, you know, it's funny. Formula SA has taken off to where there's now European counterparts. They call it Formula Student in Europe. And the rules have split slightly, but it's functionally the same competition. So the competition has gone global. It started, you know, in the 1970s. Baja predates Formula. And that's due to the generosity of Briggs & Stratton Corporation. And so, you know, in the early 80s, there were some teams who said, you know, we'd rather race on pavement than dirt. And that's how Formula started. But now that both these competitions are global in nature, and while they have, you know, the big competition for Formula is in Michigan every year, there's regional ones for Baja, but there's international, there's competitions in Europe, in Australia, South America, Japan and Korea. So it's really stunning how it's brought in schools from all over the world.
If a student were looking for a program, how would they find one?
Well, if they're in the U.S., just go to SAE.org and you can find the, you have to kind of dig through the website a little bit, but you can find the listing for all the college chapters and there's contacts there. But what you'll find that most any university these days that has an engineering program has an SAE student program as well. And so if you just, depends on where you live. I mean, in the Atlanta area, you know, obviously Georgia Tech, Kennesaw State, I think where else have I visited? Even I visit Lanier Tech. University of Georgia added a engineering program a few years back. You know, originally Georgia Tech was supposed to be the engineering school for University of Georgia, but there's so many students who wanted to get into Georgia Tech, they started a program at UGA. And I visited that one in Athens, so a brand new one, but you can find them pretty much anywhere.
Lanier Tech's actually in my hometown.
I was going to say.
Lanier Tech is actually in my hometown.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we very affectionately refer to it as Gaines Vegas.
Actually, my friend John Leverett runs the Motorsports Engineering program at Lanier Tech.
Yeah, I've met John a few times over the years. So, yeah, they run a great program there.
This is very cool. Very cool stuff. Dean, what else is going on in your life? Anything, what else is happening outside SAE that we might touch on today?
Well, the cool stuff, my friends at Motivo, that's my main client these days. It's a small engineering product development company that really has its roots in motorsports. But now the projects they work on, all forms of electrification and autonomy for ground transportation, aerospace, you know, marine applications and a farm. Mm. They developed an electric autonomous tractor.
Wow.
It's spun off as a separate company, Monarch Tractor. So if you got any listeners who are looking for engineering careers, please look at Motivo and look at Monarch Tractors.
Motivo. I'm going to, what's that? What do they have a website?
Yeah. Motivo.com.
Motivo.com. Okay. Very simple. That's good. I forgot one thing about the SAE pursuit is that individual teams, as they put together their cars, those cars can be sponsored by local. They can get local sponsorships from local businesses and stuff, can't they?
Oh, well, not just local, but international. I mean, what the funny thing about Formula SAE is you can go to a competition and see a car that will have stickers of Ford, GM, and Chrysler, and Toyota, then powered by like a Kawasaki or something. because the value there is not sponsorship in terms of what is the value of the sticker on the car. It's promoting education and meeting. The reason companies do this, you know, if you go to the competition, you know, you'll find 100+ schools there. No one has the budget and time to go visit and interview students at 100 universities. But if you go to one event and meet the best students with their, in essence, rolling resume, very cost and time effective, which is why companies will sponsor it. And that's why when I worked for Ford in the 90s, we went around, we found, you know, at the time, I think there was only like 80 schools entered in the 90s. And Ford was sponsoring like 30 of the schools to varying degrees. And so it wasn't like, hey, we would favor this school. We kind of spread the money around because we're just trying to use it as for spotting talent. So,
but right. And case in point, you know, when I was at the Georgia Tech team, we had sponsorship from both General Motors and from Honda, because yes, we had a Honda power plant. And, you know, I know that we had a couple of our guys who were also interning at GM in the summer. And you know, I know the fruits of the labor of Formula SAE. If you go to most race teams, professional race teams in the U.S., you'll find several graduates of Formula SAE doing engineering on those vehicles, whether it's in construction and design or the actual day-to-day running of the race car on the track, pulling from those skills they developed at Formula SAE.
You're absolutely right. I mean, actually, if you don't have Formula SAE or Baja SAE in your resume, most race teams will not even talk to you. If you go to the IndyCar paddock or IMSA paddock or any place, I can almost guarantee you any engineer under the age of probably 45 has Formula SAE in their resume.
Wow.
I mean, it's really, in racing, you almost just can't get the position because you're starting out 4 years behind if you don't have that experience.
Sounds indispensable for anybody who wants to remain in the industry.
Well, it's just, it's certainly the fast track in. I mean, there's other ways you can do it, but if I ever meet a student who professes interest in cars but doesn't want to get involved in one of these programs, it's kind of like, what are you missing here? I mean, unless you know, occasionally you have a student who maybe is going to school part time while working. He's got such time conflicts they can't do it, but if they miss it, they've really missed a golden opportunity. You know, my generation, when you'd get a job interview, I'd have to spend half the interview explaining what SAE Baja was. Now, everyone who you'd be interviewing with knows exactly what it is and doesn't want to know the overall. They want to know the details. You know, it'd be, Tim, what did you do on the project? Not just tell me about the project. I mean, they'd be very, very specific.
Right. Wow.
Yes. What skills did you use? What knowledge did you acquire? And how can you use that in our organization?
Exactly.
Dean, very exciting stuff. Please keep us posted and let us know if we can do anything to help students in their journey as well. Not just from Kennesaw, not just from Tech.
Yeah. Well, I think keep an eye out. The schools in the Southeast there once want to do a little test and tune day. You should go out and see if you can drive one of them.
That's an excellent idea. I will definitely be in contact with those folks about that. We will definitely do that. Thanks for that. Let's answer some listener questions, shall we? We'll spend a few minutes doing that. I'm going to do these in backwards fashion here. So our friend Brian Phillips asks, can you overuse cruise control? Are there good and bad practices for using cruise control? And I have a pretty simple answer to this question, but I wanted to see what you guys had to say.
Overuse, I guess it depends on the definition of overuse. I can definitely think that if you've got the old school type system that does not, you know, keep a set following distance, there are situations you wouldn't want to use it in.
Right. Yeah. And right. If it's cruise control that will help you maintain a following distance, then that's different. But I'm thinking of cruise control where you just set the speed and go. And my rules, my own personal rules for using cruise control are, don't do it in the rain. Don't do it if you're trying to eat breakfast while you're driving, which is also another big don't-no. And don't do it in traffic. You know, if there's bad traffic or you know, any sort of difficult traffic, do it when there's more of an open road in front of you. And those are my three rules. Misty?
Well, I think I would add a fourth one to that, and don't use it when you're tired.
Ah, very good.
Or if you're just by yourself, because then you get the road fatigue and you just kind of like, you know, you're just kind of hanging out and you're not really doing anything. And then next thing you know, you're in a bad situation that nobody wants to be in. I'm personally not a fan of cruise control, but you know me. I mean, I like creature comforts in my car, but I don't like, I don't like things that make it where I don't have to pay attention.
One reason I like cruise control is that it'll help improve your gas mileage by a tiny bit if you're, you know, making road trips and stuff like that, because you're no longer fighting gravity and acceleration.
But if you're a little bit of a lead foot, it can keep you out of trouble too. And I use the hell out of it on all my biz travels. You know, for those who don't know, among our listeners, you know, I drive many weeks, you know, hundreds of miles a week, sometimes more than 1,000 miles a week to get to all the places I have to go. And it's mostly interstate, and I use the hell out of cruise control in the interstate, not only to keep me from getting the tickets and saving a little gas, but also because it it doesn't so much reduce the amount of attention I have to pay. It reduces the number of ways I have to divide my attention with operating the vehicle. You know, I let the cruise control handle the speed, and I can keep my mind more on keeping it between the lines and that kind of thing.
And keep my foot over the brake.
Yeah.
Is this where I make you all sick again with the 45 miles a gallon that my MX-5 gets on the highway?
Nice. That's pretty sweet.
Dean is laughing at that. That's.
I mean, you know, it's. I think I actually do on the highway. I get some of the best gas mileage out of any of us.
Yeah, my old Mazda 3 was pretty close to that.
Tim, what are you trying to say?
Regarding fuel economy, yes, it's generally a good fuel economy favor unless you're in very hilly terrain.
Right.
Depending on how good your fuel, how your cruise control is, it may let your speed slow down enough before it, you know, applies throttle that if you have an automatic transmission, it will kick you down a gear. And generally, you get your best fuel economy in a higher gear with a large throttle opening rather than a lower gear with a not as much throttle opening. So if you, your foot will get ahead of what the cruise control would slowly do and then try to make up for. So.
Dean, have you got any final words of our advice for our friend with this cruise control question?
No, I think you covered all the ones. I mean, the biggest one, I think, is just – if there's too much traffic, you know, the adaptive cruise controls, the modern ones are fantastic, but if you're looking at the old school ones, you really got to be careful where you use it. I mean, I would only use that on like on I-5 and kind of the same reason, just to avoid tickets to where all of a sudden you don't realize you're doing 85 and get pulled over. So
very cruise true.
Control usually is just to prevent tickets for me.
Right. Brian asks a second question. I didn't realize he had two in our list. I'd forgotten about that. His second question is, he has a 2018 Mazda 6 that has a 2.5 liter GDI engine, and he says naturally aerated. Those are his words. should I put an oil catch can on it?
No.
No.
Why?
Well, I mean, he could. I don't think it would do any harm, but I don't see the point in it either.
Basically, the motor comes with a catch can inside of it already. There should be what he's talking about is in the PCV system, the positive crankcase ventilation system, you get the blow-by gases that end up in the crankcase normally. They end up going up through the top of the valve cover, out through a hose, and then pulled back into the intake. And then sometimes you get a little bit of oil mist with that, and that can end up on your valves and take up your valves a little bit. But the manufacturer has already got a various systems inside that PCV route that should be getting rid of most of that oil that has gotten into the air that's getting sucked back into the intake. If there's something wrong with your vehicle, you might need a catch can, but that's, you know, if you've got a bad issue with your rings.
Right, exactly. By that point, you know something else is seriously going on with an engine, especially an engine of that age, or that youth, I should say. It's not a very old engine at all. So,
yeah.
So our friend Robert Drake has the last question we're going to tackle today. My friend Banu submitted another question, which I think will make for an entire segment. I don't think we'll have the time to tackle his question today.
Good old Banu.
Good old Banu, yes. So Robert Drake, he says, I have been to several places that try to ban you from slowing down by downshifting. This raises the question of when to do shifting as a means of decreasing velocity makes sense and when it's a mistake to do so. So engine braking, right? Is that what he's talking about?
Absolutely required in the Alps. I'm serious. No, I mean, they have signs that says, brake by engine, you know, because we're talking 10, you know, we're talking huge degrees of... You know, and I'm sorry, if you don't know how to brake by engine, I think they should just, you know, revoke your license.
So I'm sorry, Ben, just one real quick. Why would any place try to ban you from slowing down by downshifting?
Well, that's where I was going, because the only ban of this that I'm familiar with in the United States would be applicable only to large trucks.
Yeah, Jake brakes.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Because the old Jake brakes are pretty noisy. If you've ever heard this kind of sound come out of a big rig when it slows down, that's what you're hearing. But the newer systems aren't very loud.
Yeah. I make the same noise after I have Mexican food.
Right.
So, yeah. Sorry, that was cheap shot. I admit it. So,
but, you know, cars today are so quiet that it wouldn't make a difference noise wise. And I can't think of any other reason anybody would care. You know?
Well, I mean, to do a downshifting like that, I mean, obviously you would not do it while you're at speed, but it, you right. know, if you put the car into first gear, you know, especially low drive automatics, this is not something you're doing on the fly, right? It's a planned thing to leave your car in low gear before you hit a descent. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah. No, you're not wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think it's just legislation proposed because it sounds good and proposed by people who actually don't know how cars work.
I think that's right. And it could just be that what Robert's seeing is really only applicable to big trucks, semis, and not cars.
100%. Yes. That's like sometimes you see a sign that says no through truck. Well, right. because, you know, it's a small road and, you know, they don't want semis going through. That doesn't mean you can't drive your Ford F-150 on that road.
Right. Yeah, you could stick it to the man by driving your Ford F-150 through there and downshifting at the same time.
No, you stick it to the man by pushing your Ford F-150 through there while waiting on your good friend that is smart enough to drive a Chevrolet to come pick you up.
Right.
You know, so, it's a shame that we're not visual here because there's a great picture somebody took of one of my cars a few years ago, back about... Oh, a decade ago or so, maybe a little bit. Yeah, I was driving a VW Golf and I happened to park it in some kind of public park area or something. And a friend of mine got a picture of it. There was a sign in the foreground that said golfing prohibited. It was, you know, sheer chance. I didn't know the sign was there when I parked.
Right, right. That's too funny. Dean, in the world of racing, downshifting has a completely different purpose.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, you're trying to optimize your revs. You want to be the peak, you know, power. So, you know, that's a completely different scenario. And there, though, you know, you got massive brakes. So you're not really worried about overdoing the brakes. I mean,
right.
There, you just want to be on the proper part of the power curve.
Right. When you get back on the gas, the race cars. Right. Do not use the engine to slow down. Yeah, much better brakes than that.
Right. So, Robert, I hope this thoroughly covers the topic of slowing down by downshifting for you. If it doesn't, please let us know and we'll tackle it again. Banu, I'm sorry, we're not going to get to your question today, but I'm going to bring it up anyway because we need food for thought for the next episode. Banu says... And he presented a photo of it, which we can't show you, but he says, can you initiate a discussion of times listeners employed or witnessed the employment of a vehicle for a purpose it was not meant for? As a peripheral example, he says he saw on eBay, an eBay auction that he was thinking about buying this 1996 Saab runway friction tester. It was a Saab that had been adapted to become a runway friction tester. So different purpose other than just driving every day. And we may ask Bonner to join us for that and explain why he was actually bidding on that car. But surely there are other vehicles out there that are adapted to purposes other than driving. And I think we can dedicate a larger segment to that.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. Yep. Dean, thank you as always for being our guest today. It's always good to see you. And please let us know if you have time or if you're in Georgia again, it would be great to hook up.
Yeah, let's have a beer.
Absolutely. If you're in Southern California, come by and visit me at Motiva. Mm-hmm. We're right, you know, it's kind of funny. Our location is very cool. We're right by where the Goodyear Blimp parks. We're right by where the Porsche Experience Center is. So we can go over there for coffee. It's a really cool location. So lot of great automotive and aerospace history in the area.
And if you ever find yourself on my side of the ocean, I'm not that far from Delft. You know, and I can make it, happen if you're ever speaking at like Eindhoven or, one of the other universities.
Well, if I can get one of them to pay for a plane ticket over there, I'd be happy to come over and speak.
get one of the schools to bring him over, Misty.
You know, I'll have to see what I can do.
I wasn't going to say anything about this last bit before we cut loose, but I have actually started having conversations with people in the TV world. We are now making an earnest pursuit to see if we can't piece together something in the way of a television treatment or a short 5 to 10 minute pilot. So if anybody in the world has any advice to share about that or any networking contacts that I might make in the world of television production, I'm still sort of in the advice gathering phase. Let me rephrase that. I'm in the advice gathering and first rough draft writing phase of what we might do for a television show. So it's very exciting stuff for my own selfish purposes. And that's it. So I have a wonderful note from Ben here that says, don't forget trivia. I promise not to forget the trivia. Two questions. How old do you have to be to get a driver's license in South Dakota? I believe this one is, both of these are from Trivia Czar Tim. Do you have to be 15, 14, 12, or 10 in South Dakota to get a driver's license? Dean, you want to take a first guess?
I'm going to guess because of farm equipment and things, possibly as young as 12.
12? Ben, what do you think?
I was going to go with that, but I'm going to say 14 just because not all the 12-year-olds can reach the pedals.
Right. Tim, do you remember the answer to this one?
You know, I never do. But my best guess is 14.
14. Misty, what do you think?
I'm going with 12.
12. So the answer is actually 14.
See, I do remember.
Yep. And I'm trying to find the source here. Dakota, Tim put a link in here. A driver education is required for licensed participants, applicants under 16, but apparently you can still get one. You can still be licensed at the age of 14 to drive in North Dakota. So if you get a driver's license in North Dakota at the age of 14, can you drive into a neighboring state and still be legal?
I would think so.
I would think so, but not if you move.
Yes. Right. Second question. What is the, what is the Dodge Fratzog? Fratzog. Is it the Dodge model name used in place of Grand Caravan in Australia and New Zealand, where the words Grand Caravan are equivalent to Fat Camper? Is it B, the choice B is a rebadged Mercedes-Benz Unimog sold to the U.S. military in the 1960s because the military could only buy vehicles from companies headquartered in the USA? Or is it A, the triangular logo used by Dodge from the early 1960s through the late 70s? Dean, what do you think?
I'm going to go with the logo.
You're going to go with the logo?
Yeah.
Okay. Misty?
I'm going with the rebadged Mercedes.
Okay. Interesting. Why do you choose this?
Because they all sound plausible, but the fact that the Mercedes acronym is closest to... You know,
Fratzog.
Yeah.
Yes. Ben, what do you think?
Well, yeah, they do all sound plausible. I'm going to go with the Australia and New Zealand thing just because I love how delightfully weird they are down there.
They all drive fat campers.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Tim, you remember?
I believe it was the logo.
That is correct. Tim remembers this one. Dean gets it right. It is the logo, the triangular logo used by Dodge from the early 60s through the late 70s. Dodge plans to bring back this triangular logo to use on its upcoming EVs. So, well, you know, have a rebirth of the Fratzog at some point. Again, Dean, thank you for stopping by the show and being our guest. Thanks, everyone else, for listening and being part of the Thing About Cars family. We will see you with another episode in about a week. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.